Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lako Tongan, who is a professor of International and Intercultural Studies and Political Studies at Pitzer College. He was born and raised in what is the world's newest country, South Sudan, now undergoing a power struggle between its president and former vice president. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lako Tongan.
Thank you very much, Ian, for inviting me.
And you were telling me earlier that your relatives are very concerned about what's happening. You're very concerned about what's happening in the world's newest country that's been at war with the North for some time and now appears to be poised to go to war against itself. Is there a real possibility of a civil war?
This is a tragedy. This is a tragedy for Southern Sudanese. Because, as you have just mentioned, the civil war was fought for about 50 years almost. No real peace existed in South Sudan since 1955, the entire country. And so the achievement of independence was viewed really as the greatest sacrifice that we have made, you know, in order to achieve it, namely the 3 million lives that we lost could be, you know, celebrated for the independence that we achieve. And so witnessing what is going on right now is distressing, not just to South Sudanese alone, but also to our friends who have supported us, actually, in achieving that independence. So what is going on at the moment, I think it's a reflection of many things. And perhaps if you don't mind, let me go through some of them just to highlight what is involved here.
Yeah, please do.
First, I would say that it's a power struggle. And that power struggle has been ethnicized, namely that it has taken an ethnic form. And this is tragic because, in a sense, I blame the failure, actually, during the guerrilla war, you know, in educating people as to how to form what you might call, a modern peoplehood, namely uniting the country, actually, or uniting all the people. Second, reasons for the conflict, of course, is the struggle for the control of state power, controlling the state. And as we know, he who that controls the state, especially in Africa, is the one who controls the distribution of state resources. And in the case of South Sudan, this has become more so because of the oil revenues, namely the petrol dollars that South Sudan has been able to get. I mean, something like, a billion every quarter, you know, is received from that oil. And so the conflict is how and who can control the state in order to control those revenues that are derived from oil. And in a sense, you could say the politics of South Sudan has become a politics of ethnicizing the modern state, how each ethnic group would like to control the modern state. So what it turns out to be here is that two ethnic groups consider themselves to be numerically more superior than others. The Dinkas are about 2 million, probably 20% of South Sudan population. The Nuers are about 1.5 million, and they are about 15% of the population of 10 million people. That is the estimate that the World Bank and the IMF have estimated. And so what we see here, unfortunately, is that South Sudan does not have classes. We don't have middle class, really. We don't have business class. We don't have classes that can mediate, you know, ethnic interests, mediate ethnic conflicts. And so what you end up really is having elites who are more representing their ethnic groups rather than the national interests of the country, if there is something like that, you know. And so this, in a sense, makes it very difficult to reconcile the contending interests. And so I'm afraid that as long as there are some loose talks, particularly among the elites from the two ethnic groups, they talk about the idea of ruling South Sudan for 1,000 years. I mean, they sound more millenarian, you know, in a sense. And this has been heard a lot, particularly from the Dinka groups. I mean, I've been going home, except last summer. I was there before independence, and then an independence, which in fact I was were planning to talk actually over what was going on. I was planning to talk with you. And then I went the first anniversary, that is 2012, okay, the summer before last. I came back completely discouraged because of the way how the ethnic politics has been heavily, heavily introduced into the politics of South Sudan, and how difficult it is for anybody, even for those of us who are outside, you know, to go and participate in administering this country, which needs a lot of, at least, talents and ideas. But there is an attitude there that if it continues the way it is, especially between the two ethnic groups, South Sudan might go into another civil war, unfortunately.
And my understanding, Lakatongan, is that the president, Salva Kiir, is an ethnic Dinka, but his power struggle is with his former vice president, Riek Machar, who's a newer, and hasn't and been some fairly brutal fighting in the very capital, Juba, and then in the town of Bor that the mutineers, newer soldiers, seem to have taken over. So if just from what you've told us, presidents represents the Dinka, who are 20%, and the former vice president represents the newer, who are 15%, who make up the rest of the country?
Exactly. And I think that is the crux, really, of the problem. Namely that if both of them constitute 35%, 65% of South Sudanese are not engaged in what they are fighting over. And that raises the question as to how each of the two is going to try to get support from the remaining 65% of the population. And this is where the danger really lies in terms of civil war. Because both of these groups are located in the northernmost part of South Sudan, namely by the border with Sudan, you know, the old Sudan. And the rest or most of the population, that is neither of the two, are located more in the southern part of the country. That is what we call the Greater Equatoria, where a lot of southern Sudanese are located. And so it is how these other groups are going to respond to the struggle between the two. And I think what is happening is that Salva Kiir, who represents the Dinka, is trying to recruit or trying to at least bring to his side those non-Dinkas who are located in Greater Equatoria. And the same thing also is happening with Riek Machar. And in fact, if we look at the people who have been arrested or being detained, okay, it goes across the different ethnic groups. It is not just the Nuers who are being detained, but also from other groups like the Bari, the Moro. You know, these are all ethnic groups that are located in southern part of the country, that is in Greater Equatoria. So it seems like Riek Machar has got support, at least from the elites that come from these other groups. And what I think he's able to do is that he's saying, this is not really an attempted coup by the Nuers. But it is, as he has put it, actually, it's not an attempted coup. It is Salva Kiir using it, and I think there is some truth to it, using it in order to purge the party, namely the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, which is the ruling party, purge it of those critics, the critics of Salva Kiir. Because honestly, Salva Kiir is not somebody who is comfortable in dealing with disagreements. He has, I would say, because of the conditions, you know, in the bush, there was little room to deal with the ideas of how to negotiate, you know, when there are conflicts. So he has, to some extent, a military mentality that it is orders that matters rather than negotiations, you know, to end, let's say, contention or something like that. And I think this is where the tragedy really is. And I think it is, as far as I'm concerned, it is him really who can de-accelerate, you know, the conflict, the crisis at the moment, because the other groups have come to accept, and this is true again that I witnessed when I was there, that Salva Kiir is not listening to other groups. He listens to advisors who tend to come from his immediate, you know, group from his area. Now, this is not to say that all the Dinkas are united. In fact, it is interesting that there are divisions within the Dinka. So Bor, for example, from which late John Garang came from, is where the Nuers have taken control of. Okay? Secondly, also, the wife of late John Garang, who comes from Bor, has been detained also by Salva Kiir regime. So in a sense, it is more complicated than simply saying it is an ethnic conflict. There are more other, you know, factors that are underlying this. And the most important, of course, is the control of state power, as and by extension, the control of the petrodollars. This is, in a sense, you know, the resource curse that is being manifested in South Sudan.
Well, I'm afraid we're pretty much run out of time, Lakatongan, but it would seem also that you have a terrible ethnic wars going on right next door in the Central African Republic to South Sudan. And so the real question would be, you know, is anybody from the outside world going to intervene? The French are intervening along with African troops. But so this is a very volatile mixture, is it not, in this general neighborhood?
Absolutely. And hopefully the UN presence in South Sudan, and I just look at the news just now, three UN troops have been killed in a place called Akobo, which is on the Ethiopian border. And this is it has been carried out by the Nuers, young Nuers who have guns, of course. And South Sudan is full of guns. It's full of guns. There is no question about it. And this is the most dangerous thing. Our people take guns to be like a toy, but, you know,
they're a very deadly toy.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, look, Laka, let's do a follow-up soon, because it sounds like we certainly need to talk more, and it sounds like things are not improving. I thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Lakatongan, who is a professor of international intercultural studies and political studies at Pitzer College. He was born and raised in what is the world's newest country, South Sudan, now undergoing a power struggle between its president and its former vice president. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about the Detroit bankruptcy, where the banks are making out like bandits.